Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Fred Obiero.
Hello, and welcome to the Ivy Podcast. My guest today is Kim Henderson. She's the Managing Director at Cobalt Compass Solutions. How are you doing, Kim?
I'm doing great, Fred. Thank you for inviting me in. Very excited to be here.
Pleasure's all ours. Thanks. Before we start this episode, I have one small request to our listeners. As we continue to grow the Ivy Podcast, we would appreciate if you would take just a minute of your time to leave us a review on the show, because reviews make a huge difference to podcast channels like ours. Now, time for the episode with Kim. So, Kim, tell us about yourself and your background and what you do at Cobalt Compass Solutions.
Okay, thank you, Fred. Cobalt Compass Solutions, very simply, provides training and consulting services to support the staffing industry. Training could be anything from sales and sales leadership training, from entry-level new hires, all the way through senior-level sales execs. And then our consulting services offers operational support if companies, as they engage on starting new divisions and new business units, helping them set those up, and then ultimately optimizing them for revenue and performance. Prior to Cobalt Compass, I've been in the staffing industry since 1993, worked for Hays, which is a global staffing company headquartered in the UK. I was on the executive team for the United States and was also responsible for global accounts in North America. Uh-huh. In addition to that, started strategic accounts in the USA and our government solutions division as well. And then finally, right before, prior to Hays, was on the executive team of K-Force, a national company within the United States only, and worked multiple positions there, but most notably, as an exec team member, was responsible for strategic accounts and the national sales strategy across multiple product lines. And then finally, in order to make a little bit better sense of staffing and approach it from a more methodical standpoint, have a PMP and a Six Sigma Lean certification to optimize business units and help those function more properly for the customers.
That's amazing. And I find that to be actually insightful because, you know, that's my background, project right. management. And when I saw that you had that on top of staffing, I said, we have to get her on the podcast. And quick question though. So you have a very diverse mix of a background. You work for a global company, Hays. You work for a large national company, K-Force, and now you work for Cobalt. Any parallels or any differences between those major corporations and where you are now?
You know, I think the one thing I would say is, you know, I've been everywhere from a small company, right? When I first joined K-Force, we were probably about, you know, $30 million in revenue and then grew to $1 billion. And then of course, Hays is somewhere about around $5.5 billion in revenue. That whether it's a smaller company or a larger one, you know, these challenges that the staffing industry has are very much the same, right? Regardless of size and scale. It's, you know, how to engage candidates, how to engage clients, how to make the most placements, how to attract and retain talent, and how to go and of course grow headcount and grow revenue. So regardless of size, they all do seem to have very similar you know, issues and challenges that that they have to adapt to.
So that's actually a perfect segue to my next question, which relates to client relationships. So in the staffing industry, you know, client relationships are extremely vital to the success of the staffing firms. Explain to us how you developed a client retention strategy, particularly when the economy is dealing with inflation concerns, as we are right now.
Okay, thank you, Fred. Client retention is perhaps one of my most favorite topics, especially today. If we think about it, over the past 18 months, staffing companies have really been hyper-focused on engaging and retaining their internal employees, as well as, you know, finding candidates, attracting them, and, you know, to fulfill the client needs. Most staffing companies have not really been placing an emphasis on client retention, just quite simply, demand's been so high and so strong that they feel that there's been an endless need, right? So what's happened is many staffing companies and the staffers that work in them have, through de facto, almost become order takers, right? So as we look at some of the dynamics that are going on in the economy right now, we know that downturns and slowdowns, you know, Fred, they're always inevitable and cycles happen. I think both you and I, you know, lived through 2001 and 2008. And what we need to do is prepare now to retain our clients before a slowdown actually happens, right? And, and figure out a strategy to keep our customers engaged and loyal before, you know, things really do take a dramatic turn and there's decreased demand.
That's wonderful. Go ahead.
Sure. So with that, there definitely are some strategies that we can employ today to start to gain a little bit of client loyalty and retention. Would you like me to talk about those at the current time?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people will be listening to this, and those are tips that I think will be helpful, especially those that are either coming into the industry right now or they are fearful of losing clients when the market stabilizes.
Oh, great point. You're right. Some new staffers have not actually been in a downturn yet.
Exactly.
So, they haven't lived through some of the things that we all experienced in 2008. The first thing I'd say, and it sounds very simple, but many people have not mastered this. Find the customer's pain and eliminate it, right? You know, it's often said that there is no pain, there was never going to be a sale. You know, we need to basically be listening to our customers now, asking them questions and really determining what are their challenges, what are their issues, right? And I think the longer we've all been in staffing, we kind of get into this mode of, you know, we think we know a little bit better than them sometimes. We assume that we know what their problems are and we jump too quickly on a solution, right? Rather than asking questions, sitting back and listening and letting them tell us in their own words what the issues that they're having with their business, their department, their team, their industry. And then once we get those answers, sitting down and crafting a meaningful service or solution that's going to answer and solve those problems, right? Our goal ultimately is to become a trusted advisor to them and not just a staffing supplier or a vendor, right? So I think that's the first thing. Listening, asking questions, truly understanding what's going on in their team that's challenges and in their industry that's a challenge. Second, and this kind of fits along with that, is becoming relevant to them. And that might sound confusing, but let's look at it this way in staffing. You know, we sometimes compare ourselves to ourselves and think we're doing a great job. And what I mean by that is, you know, we can make a handful of placements at a customer or have 20 contractors on assignment and think we're doing a super job, right? And then we talk to our customer and find out that our competition has 100 contractors on assignment and is making three times the perm placements that we're making. And we never even knew that because we never took the time to ask our customer, you know, who's your top supplier and why, and how many folks do they actually place out here? So it's incumbent on us to really learn all the departments, the teams, business units, not only so we can gain client share, but the more we're able to provide them our full suite of products and perhaps sell in, you know, contract, perm, IT, finance and accounting, you know, healthcare if it's applicable. Offering them our full suite of services means that we start to become less expendable and more relevant to them, right? Think of it this way. If, you know, your company is a staffing company, has 300 people on assignment and is making perm placement, making heavy perm placements every month, it's much harder to remove you as a supplier because you're so pivotal and crucial to their business, right? So that's what we want to do. We want to get to that, you know, we're the top supplier or at least one of the top two suppliers as defined by the customer, where we've become so relevant that it would be almost impossible to remove us because it would have a detrimental effect on your business. And I think most staffing companies, unfortunately, do a very poor job of that client penetration and becoming really relevant and expanding throughout that entire organization. You know, some people tend to find a sweet spot and just dig into that one vein of gold versus looking at it, you know, holistically and working on their business as well as in their business.
Right. That's actually a very insightful way of showcasing value to your clients, because like you said, you want to be viewed as a partner, not necessarily as a vendor. And I think what you just alluded to there goes a long way in establishing that. So I want to talk about something else because it's relevant to what we're living through now, which is, you know, this hybrid workforce. Online collaboration tools such as Zoom and Slack have become very prevalent in how companies choose to engage with their customers. And since the beginning of the pandemic, what are some of the effective ways, right, to ensure that you're maximizing your chances of engaging with your clients one-on-one, especially in this hybrid environment?
Great question, Fred, because even before the pandemic, we had all become so reliant on, you know, texting, email, LinkedIn, video. And I think the net-net, while those are useful and they help us conduct business and they facilitate us making our placements, the one thing that we can't forget about and need to re-engage with is that one-on-one in-person interaction with our clients, right? There's no better way to build the trust and rapport than in-person. And while I'm not, you know, advocating that we need to be on airplanes every week, we do need to make it a point to get out in front of our customers, whether it is one-on-one, lunches, dinners, after-hour sporting events, you name it. I think some of the people that I've seen be most successful in staffing, and what really helped me was developing a relationship one-on-one with the customer, face-to-face, in after-hours type events. You just can't replicate it on Zoom. You can't replicate it on the phone or email. Yeah, right. And then also, Fred, I'd say that when you're talking to these individuals one-on-one, or even if it is, you know, via video, have something to say that they're going to care about, right? Just calling someone and saying, you know, hey, how are you doing, provides little to no value. You know, basically talk to them about, you know, laws and regulations that are affecting their industry, press releases that are going on with their company or with other companies that are similar. You know, basically engage in meaningful conversation with these individuals about their business, so you can stay relevant with them, right? You know, there is no value in, hey, how are you doing? You know, get some value, have meaningful conversations, and then maybe start to talk about some value add services that would be important to them as well. Something beyond staffing that they would deem useful.
Yeah, and that's important, because just having a contact point to say, hi, how are you? That's not really going to help them, especially when, you know, companies tend to be very busy different times of the year. And if you're a staffing company reaching out just to say, hi, I don't think you're establishing any value. I don't think you're making good use of the time that you have in front of that client. So just like you said, one-on-one is important because you can help establish the strong rapport between you and these clients, right?
Right. And make certain that you've become a student of their industry so you can have something meaningful to discuss with them. So you can talk about their business problems and offer some solutions to you within the vein of staffing or something that's value add.
Great. So my next question is about self-evaluation, just looking at yourself, looking at your company, looking at what are your core competencies, what do you do better, how can you improve? So self-evaluation is critical to any company that holds a high regard for their reputation. Walk us through how you gather client feedback and use that within your organization to enhance and improve your services.
Absolutely. Client feedback is part of the retention strategy, right? It's one of the pillars to the stool. So when it comes to collecting customer feedback, let's face it, it's hard to improve your business if you don't know how your customers feel about it. You know, you're kind of moving around in the dark. So every company needs to establish a process for obtaining the feedback and sharing that information with the rest of the organization. And there's multiple ways to do it, right? The most common way is to utilize survey tools that are out there. There's so many of them. There's probably too many to name.
SurveyMonkey is one of them that comes to mind. Google Forms is another.
Yeah, Net Promoter Score, I think, is a popular one as well.
That's one of my favorite ones, by the way.
I know, that one's, it's easy to use. And this is where that whole customer feedback loop comes into play, right? You know, you need a system to collect the data, analyze it, and then distribute that information throughout your organization then actually come up with an action plan to correct it, right? And also you could be, maybe it's something that doesn't need correcting. Maybe you're just missing opportunities to enhance your service. Maybe there's something out there the customers are clamoring for and you just never realized it. So that's where these surveys can be very helpful as far as collecting, analyzing data and putting plans in place to move forward. And then also, Brett, I think the beauty, and some people kind of don't necessarily enjoy doing a quarterly review with their clients, but often today, many clients provide their own scorecard to us. Uh-huh. So it's actually a great opportunity to sit down with them monthly, quarterly, go through your numbers, go through your performance, and determine where you need to have improvement. And you have a dialogue with them, right? It's a back and forth of sharing of information. And let's face it, you may have issues that are prohibiting you from being successful with that customer. Their process may not be, completely perfect. Maybe there's some things they need to work on, but this is a great opportunity for the dialogue to actually happen during the scorecard review. So if someone offers a scorecard their own, embrace it. They're actually doing some of the work for us.
Yeah. Actually, so follow-up question to that. Let's say you've done your research and you have feedback that you want to share with your client, and the feedback may not necessarily be something that shines a positive light, if I can, on the client. How do you go about communicating that in a way that does not ruffle feathers or ruin relationships?
Right. That's a tremendously good question, because oftentimes, let's face it, it's not what you say, it's how you say it and how you
yes.
present. So first, I would say, facts and data, right? Facts and data never lie, and they can't really be disputed. So have your numbers, make certain that the data is accurate when you present it to the customer. So it's not just a gut feeling or a thought or an intuition or your opinion. Present them with the information and do it from a standpoint of, hey, we are your partner. We want to make this relationship successful. We're in this together. Here's where we're struggling. Here's what would help us. What are your thoughts? Do you agree with us? Do you have some other ideas? Or are you struggling with a particular facet of your business that's impacting, how we deliver for you? So really, I think it's having an open dialogue with them. Uh-huh. Based on facts and figures, and then a true willingness to want to go and make it work with them and arrive at a better spot. So again, I think it's really all in the presentation. And then finally, on that topic, Fred, I'd like to say, we also need to analyze our turnover metrics, right? We've all lost customers and they leave us for a myriad of reasons, but we need to catalog why are they no longer buying our services and evaluate that data to better understand our churn rate. Uh-huh. And then, helps us spot our weaknesses and improve upon them. And then finally, oftentimes we dismiss a customer in a very polite way and part ways with them because they may not fit our model or our rates or our skill sets. And I would implore any organization, go back and look at those customers as well where we parted ways, because times change, people change, dynamics change, and a company that wasn't a good fit for us 3-4 years ago, now it could be a completely different game and we may be a very good fit for them. So always evaluate why people leave us and then why we may part ways with the customer, and continually look at that to see if it's a relationship that could and should be resurrected, if it makes sense.
That's great. So my next question is basically around the staffing industry in general and the market trend. So is there a benefit that comes with being a generalist, where if you're a staffing company, you work on everything, any type of requirement, or does success hugely depend on being a specialist? Please share any examples that you may have.
The interesting thing is, staffing companies, some out there today are generalists and some are very, very specialized. I think that when you stay a generalist, you open yourself up to commoditization, right? Lower rates, lower bill rates, lower fees. And then ultimately what happens is, go back to what we talked about earlier, if you're a commodity, you're expendable, right? If you do what every other staffing supplier does, why do they need you?
When they can become you're a dime a dozen.
Exactly. So what I think is helped many companies, and myself included, to kind of get to that trusted advisor status is becoming a specialist, right? Again, we talked about being a student of their industry, but all industries are really really different, right? So let's say that, you know, let's take healthcare and Department of Defense, manufacturing and telecom. They all have unique needs and specific business processes, right? As an example. Right. So we need to basically understand the challenges, the regulation, you know, legislation, the overall nuances to each industry that we might be working in. So for instance, let's say we're working with a DoD integrator, and I'll just throw a name out there that maybe everyone would recognize. Say you're working with General Dynamics and you're doing IT services. There's nothing more powerful than to be able to convey to them that not only can you find, you know, folks with security clearances and be able to hold those clearances for their organization, but also you have a process to maybe help them handle government FAR within their programs, right? So that's right. Just an example, you know, being able to, you know, same thing with telecom, very specific in terms of niche skill sets, you know, hey, here's how we find RF engineers. Here's how we've done it for other people. So once you're able to show a company that you really can answer the needs that are specific and challenges specific to their industry, it's powerful. And if you can give them case studies and examples of it, it really helps you migrate up that value chain to become, you know, that long-term partner that's key to their business. That's probably been one of the things I would point out that's been the most helpful to me at the desk level and at a division level as far as building a business. And I've watched other companies do the same thing as well, very successfully.
I have one other question for you here. And it's something that a lot of staffing firms that we talk to tend to struggle with. Assume you're sending candidates to a client and the client is taking weeks to conduct interviews. They take forever to give feedback on the candidates that they've interviewed. How do you go about, and this goes back to what you were saying about feedback to the client, how would you provide that data back to the client and what suggestions would you provide to them to try and mend their process?
I think it's funny. You talk to anyone who has ever managed a staffing business or worked a staffing desk, that's probably the most difficult, obstacle to challenge to overcome. Uh-huh. I think a lot of it is education, right? The one thing I've learned is our customers are often not good at hiring. And quite honestly, they don't necessarily like to hire. It's not what they want to do, right? You know, they're there to go and run a IT division. They're there to, you know, run the tax or the treasury department. You don't just automatically know how to go hire people. It's more of these side things that are part of your job, but you don't necessarily like it. So I think it's incumbent on us to be consultative and be educational to explain to them, I can make this process easier for you. Here's why. Always explain the why behind it. Here's why it makes sense to go and schedule these interviews in advance. Here's why we want to review the resumes together over the phone. Here's why we want to go and set up a debrief session. You know, I get it on the calendar now. So explain the why behind it, but always explain the what's in it for the customer. Here's what's in it for you, Mr. Customer. You know, given the current environment, people are getting jobs more quickly. They're not going to be here. You know, explaining the market dynamics, explaining, you know, dynamics with various skill sets. You know, like I mentioned, like cleared candidates for the DoD, explaining those folks, you know, have 15 job offers. They're not going to be available. So always guiding them through the process, educating them, stepping them through it, being easy to do business with, and showing them what's in it for them. You'll never completely eliminate that problem that we're talking about, but I found that if they understand the why behind it and what's in it for them, and you guide them through it, they will typically get on board much more easily than you just chasing them around.
That's true. And thanks for sharing that, because like I said, and you've alluded to, basically any company that's been in this industry, the staffing industry, they have in some way, shape or form experienced this problem, and it's a universal problem. And I think it's better that clients understand the ramifications of, you know, things like delaying, providing feedback, especially in those highly sought after candidates.
Absolutely. And I think that whether times are, you know, like what we've had with, you know, high demand and low candidate flow, it's been even more important over the past 2 years to explain, here's the process and here's why we need to follow it quickly.
Right. So my last question, and this is one of my favorite questions, what has helped you to get to where you are? And what of advice would you give to someone that wants to pursue a career that's identical to yours?
So, you know, Fred, when it comes to staffing, I think that there are There are several things that I have viewed that have really helped me and helped others that I've watched become, you know, very successful in it. First, there needs to be a commitment to the job and to the industry, along with, you know, determination and tenacity. It's not necessarily an easy business that you know, folks just jump into and they're great at, you know, month one. It really does take dedication and time to learn the business and be committed to when those times are tough, like we talked about in 2001, 2008, or when the pandemic happened. Sticking with it and sticking to the mechanics of the business and doing things the way we were trained and taught, while it's especially hard at those times, it yields dividends, right? Ultimately, we come out of every type of a downturn or imbalance, rather, and we end up, you know, being all the stronger for it. So sticking with the mechanics. So that's on a personal level, but it takes something deeper than that. You really have to have a deep, sincere desire and genuineness to help your customer, want to see them be successful, and also a genuine desire to want to help your candidate and get them a job and help them be successful. You have to look at it very long term, that while, you know, you may not be able to place a candidate today, you might place them 5 years from now. You may not be able to help a client today, but, you know, down the road, a year from now, you may have the opportunity. So it needs to be a long-term mentality. And not realizing you're going to have to do things that you don't necessarily get paid for today, but it'll yield dividends down the road if you approach it from a standpoint of being sincere and genuine and caring about the outcome, a positive outcome for both the candidate and the client. And then finally, I'd say, you know, value-add services. I try not to think of it as I'm just a staffing provider. I'm there to give them people. It's what else can I do for you? What other services do you need that you would find valuable other than, you know, me giving you a candidate? And if you ask that question, clients will tell you, you know, they often need lots of different things. You know, hey, I need a peer in the industry I can talk to, you know, can you connect me with someone like that? So again, value added services. And then finally, to kind of encapsulate all of it, I think an attitude of gratitude, right? And while that sounds, you know, like a cliche, it's really not. I think in business, showing, you know, your customers truly that you are grateful to them and you're grateful for the opportunity to work with them continually has become a lost art form. And I think that's something that we all need to show and continually remind our customers of through our actions, that we're grateful to have them and we want to continue to work with them by all the actions that we just talked about over the past few minutes here.
Kim, thank you very much. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
Fred, it was outstanding. And thank you for inviting me in. And I just thought it would be great to share some thoughts on client retention. Not only are they great if we do have a downturn, but I think they're very good tenets that we could go and implement even when times are good to help us retain our customers. It's much cheaper to retain a customer than have churn and have to go get a new one. Right.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, Kim.
Thank you, Fred. Take care.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ivy Podcast. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.